dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It's a privilege to always be able to tap the insights of a career intelligence professional in such matters. He is Fred Flights, the president and CEO of the Center for Security Policy, and the man who makes these programs possible, for which we are very grateful. He served in the Central Intelligence Agency on the House Intelligence Committee staff. He served in the State Department and the NSC under Ambassador John Bolton, who has featured prominently in a controversy that we wanted to talk with Fred about that was precipitated last week by a, I think, scurrilous attack on the president by Atlantic Monthly magazine. Fred Flights, it's good to have you always, but particularly to address this particular topic. So the story out of the Atlantic is that four unnamed sources who had previously worked in the administration were either present for or somehow were able to authenticate that the president had really demeaned men who had served and died for their country in the First World War in connection with a visit that he was supposed to make, but didn't in the end, to their gravesite. These were Marine heroes, really, of that war. And I'd be very curious to know what you make of this controversy and the facts, if there are any, behind it.
Well, Frank, it was a suspicious story at the outset because this liberal journalist decided to write an article attacking the president for making disparaging remarks about U.S. troops concerning an incident that supposedly took place 2 years ago, citing anonymous sources. Now, we already know that a central claim in this article is false, that the president's trip to this cemetery by helicopter was canceled for weather reasons. This was established in 2018. There's documentation of that. And John Bolton said in his book, and he recently said on the air, it was canceled because of weather. So Jeffrey Goldberg, this is such a false claim. Goldberg actually had to admit over the weekend that it might not be true. So in my view, Frank, end of story. The story's false. But then there's the issue of these anonymous sources said the president made these disparaging comments. And I remarked on Twitter that I know this isn't true, because if it was, John Bolton, who unfortunately has decided to dump on the president in his book, would have included it. He actually said on the air recently, this is Bolton, if that was true, I would have written an entire chapter about it. Now, there's a number of journalists who said, well, wait a minute, maybe Bolton wasn't there. Maybe it was said when he was sleeping or he was away. That's not the way things work, Frank. John knew everything. His sources told him everything. He talked to General Kennedy constantly. And I think these journalists have to answer the question, how would Bolton not know about this? And these anonymous sources did. It's impossible.
And Fred, to your point, I think what John said very explicitly was, I was there when the conversation took place about whether we were going to figure out how to get there despite the weather. And when we say weather, it wasn't the weather might affect his hairdo. It was that the weather was making it unsafe to transit by helicopter, and the alternative of traveling by car was ruled out for safety security reasons. But Fred, I think to your point that, you know, what did John Bolton know and when would he know it? He allowed us how this may have been said at some other point, but as you say, had that happened, he almost certainly would have been apprised of it by somebody. And it certainly didn't happen in connection with the actual decision, which is the subject of Jeffrey Goldberg's piece. And for our audience's benefit, you've been, of course, operating at the highest levels of the United States government, including fairly recently. You know a fair amount about the kind of journalistic, well, I would call it malfeasance, that Jeffrey Goldberg has engaged in for years, notably being one of the first to promote this whole idea that Donald Trump was an agent or otherwise complicit with Russia in the 2016 election. Is that not right?
Yeah, that's right. But let me talk about what the journalists have done as the story started to teeter. They started saying, well, we have other anonymous sources who claim that the president said disparaging things about other troops on another occasion. And they're almost saying, Frank, well, if you don't believe this story, how about this one? This is such dishonesty in journalism. There's a Fox News journalist, Jennifer Griffin. That's what she's arguing. Well, I know of another instance. No, the main story that Jeffrey Goldberg said is obviously false. Now let's check out the other stories. I'm sure they're false too.
But there's no real way of knowing as long as you're dealing with anonymous sources. And the only people who have come forward on the record, at least in connection with this incident that's been reported by Jeffrey Goldberg in The Atlantic, are saying it didn't happen. Sarah Sanders, the previous press secretary, as well as John Bolton, they were there, didn't happen. But I think to your larger point, Fred, and again, it's hard to overstate the implications of such dishonesty on the part of the so-called fourth estate, the media, the journalistic community, and the active role that they're now playing in running interference for Democratic Party, you know, nominees and positions on the one hand, and actively, seemingly, seeking to subvert, if they can, Republican, you know, nominees and positions.
And it's just worth stressing that this dishonest piece about something that happened 2 years ago, based on anonymous sources, is plopped down 2 months before an election. I mean, that in itself is extremely suspicious, but it's what we've been seeing for years with this Russia collusion hoax. Stories show up at an inopportune time for the president by the left, and when Joe Biden did his first press conference after this story last week, who did he call out first? An Atlantic reporter. So let's talk about collusion.
And Fred Flights, again, you have been in Washington for a long time. You've worked inside the government considerably in the course of a distinguished career, but you've also been outside, notably at the Center for Security Policy. You've been watching this practice of journalism, and I'm sure that it must offend your fundamental sense, not only of fairness, but of the journalistic ethics, that this is the norm now, not the exception. And what was done in the aftermath of this story, with endless repetition of it and validation of it by people who simply didn't have any basis for saying it was true, is stunning to me.
Yeah, unfortunately, this isn't the first instance, first presidential election where we've seen this shameful left-wing journalism to help the Democratic candidate. It happened against previous Republican candidates. I think Trump won in 2016 because he got beyond the dishonest journalism, that he took on the media. He went around them with Twitter and social media. And I think if he's going to win this year, and I'm not taking a position because I'm head of a nonprofit, the only way for a Republican candidate to get around this, I think, is to have an aggressive social media approach and to take on the media directly, because they are determined to defeat Republican candidates.
The challenge is serious, and we like to think that we're providing on this program sort of a more fair and objective assessment of things. Fred Flights, thanks for your contributions in every sense of the word to making this possible, and for joining us today. God bless you. Next up, we'll speak with Gordon Chang about the latest on China in this campaign, among other things. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's time for our weekly visit with Gordon Chang, one of the high points of our week. He is, of course, the author of The Coming Collapse of China, among other things. He is frequently seen in places like Fox News. He is the author of a book review in the New York Times on Sunday. He is, among other things, one of our favorite contributors here at Secure Freedom Radio, and you can follow him at Gordon G. Chang at Twitter. We're always delighted to have you, Gordon. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back. Lots to talk with you about, Gordon, very quickly. The Labor Day holiday is behind us. The campaign is now on in earnest, something that has been percolating for the past few months, past few years probably, but certainly the past few months, is now seemingly in full force, and that is framing the divisions or differences, shall we say, between Donald Trump and Joe Biden on China as a very prominent feature of this campaign season. Shed a little light, as you see it, on those differences, and is this an appropriate focus for the campaign?
Yeah. There are two very different approaches to China in the Biden and the Trump camps. The former vice president believes that the way to deal with China is to establish very strong relationships with other countries to try to contain China and to strengthen the United States. President Trump has actually been taking actions to deal with predatory and criminal Chinese actions. And I generally believe that, yes, we should strengthen our technology, strengthen our education and all the rest of it, as the vice president says. But you really can't do that when we're under malicious attack from the Chinese. So I think that it's important to take President Trump's approach and to actually impose those costs on China while we do some of the things that the vice president says. We've got to understand the maliciousness of the Chinese system. This is not something that we can deal with in the future. This is something we have to take care of now, and the president understands that.
I have to say, Gordon, I'm a little surprised the way you've characterized this. I know that, of course, Joe Biden has in recent days been talking about, you know, working with allies to contain China, but his whole record up to this point, of course, has been one of encouraging and facilitating and enabling and applauding the so-called rise of China. This is, by the way, the subject of a very powerful new documentary. I don't know that you've had a chance to see it. I did over the weekend by Peter Schweitzer, entitled Riding the Dragon, The Biden's China Secrets, I believe it is. This is a record of very stark contrast, of course, between the two candidates. Isn't it important, Gordon, to focus on that record, not just what the vice president is saying at the moment?
Yeah, there's a big difference between what the vice president did in the Obama administration and what he's been saying pre-campaign to the campaign positions. So right now, we should focus, for instance, on that May 1st, 2019 statement from the former vice president, when he said that China is not competition for the United States, and those are almost a direct quote, and then he said that Chinese leaders are not bad folks, quote unquote. So there has been a stark difference between the vice president's record and what he's been saying pre-campaign to what he's been saying and what is on the record now. And I think that the vice president needs to explain that difference to the American people. Because that will give a clue to the way that he would actually govern as president. But we're all concerned about that. And as we've talked about before, Frank, there's another element that people don't focus on, and that is every new occupant of the White House always gives China a grace period because they always try to see if they can develop cooperative and friendly relations with Beijing. President Trump did it. All of President Trump's predecessors did it. We cannot afford to lose a second because of what China has been doing recently. So the problem with a Biden presidency, regardless of what a Biden would do or think, is the grace period that he will inevitably give the Chinese, which is something that we cannot afford at this time.
This is really striking to me because, as I said, the thing that does matter, of course, is, as you indicated, Gordon, whoever the next commander-in-chief is, job one, whether it's in the national security arena, whether it's the economic portfolio, whether it's the public health space, is likely going to be communist China. And the record informs what we can expect, but what they're going to do about it is vitally important, I think, to the informed voters' choices here. And we appreciate you contributing in so many different ways to that, Gordon.
Frank, if I could, there's just one other aspect that people do not talk about, and that is the advisors that President Biden might have. We know that, for instance, Eli Ratner, who had very pro-engagement views of China, has changed. And I believe that that change is genuine. But we've got to remember that many in the Democratic Party's foreign policy establishment have not changed their pro-engagement views. And it is not only possible, but likely that those pro-engagement advisors would have an influential role in a Biden presidency. So it's also not just a question of the vice president's personal views. It's a question of who he would bring in as his senior officials and his advisors on China.
This is such a key point. My old boss Ronald Reagan used to say, Gordon, people are policy. And the people around the president, especially a president that may need as much help as Joe Biden evidently will largely determine the policies. And we need to know who they are now as well as their inclinations, of course. Gordon, let me switch gears a little bit. We're going to be talking with several of our other guests in the course of this program about something I call a fundraiser that the Chinese Communist Party seems to be holding in Hong Kong and Shanghai sometime in the next few weeks for a conglomerate there called Ant Group. I don't know if you've looked into this this company, Gordon. Our friend Roger Robinson and his team at RWR Advisory Group has, fortunately, and we've got a major new risk analysis from them that describes a lot of problems with this. Yet the Chinese seem to think that they're going to raise between $30 and $40 billion, much of it from American investors, not in Wall Street, but coming from this country, of course, to float the boat of this Ant Group and validate in the process, Gordon, their idea that they'll be able simultaneously to crack down on Hong Kong and continue to operate it as a key part of the Western capitalist system. Your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a key test for American policy because Ant Group's initial public offering will undoubtedly be the world's biggest. And we got to remember that this is not just an offering in Hong Kong. This will be simultaneous in Shanghai with their new star market. So this is a major event, not just for Hong Kong, but also for Shanghai. And we have American companies which are going to be lead managers of this, and almost certainly they're going to be selling Ant Group stock in the United States. So this is a backdoor for American portfolio investors to support a group which, as Roger Robinson has pointed out, is problematic. So there's a lot there in terms of what's going on. But this is basically Beijing saying to the world, you can say what you want about Hong Kong, but we're going to maintain its role as a global financial center. And it's America's interest to make sure that Hong Kong loses that status because of just the nature of the relationship right now between Beijing and the United States.
We're going to talk in a moment with Rick Manning, who is leading up a new campaign called Divest China Now. .org, and it seeks, I think, to act upon a recommendation by the Undersecretary of State, Keith Kroc, to, well, American investors, particularly governing boards of American universities and colleges, Gordon, that invest a lot of money through their endowments, and not a little of it is going into these various Chinese companies and probably Ant Group in the future. The point being that Keith Kroc is saying, divest China, because the value of these stocks is almost certainly going to come down. This will be in part a function of whether or not American capitalists and financiers decide they're going to continue to put money into, well, our enemies. And I guess as a man who's given more thought probably than just about anybody to the degree to which the Chinese Communist Party is our enemy, just maybe a closing word, Gordon, on what it means that we are, in fact, underwriting the operations, the companies, the malevolence of the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, Frank, for you to state it, it shows the ridiculousness of American policy that we have, not only through commerce and technical cooperation sharing agreements, but maybe most importantly, through investment. We have been empowering and enabling an enemy that is configuring its forces to kill Americans and which attacks our country through cyber means every day, stealing hundreds of billions of dollars of U.S. intellectual property each year. What will history say of us that we helped China destroy our society?
Yeah, and if it were confined to just that, it would be one thing. But Gordon, and we'll be talking with Kevin Freeman about this, of course, the unrestricted warfare that has extended into a whole host of other ways of attacking our country, including, it appears, in their blueprint, civil disturbances and street riots, and possibly an attack on the financial markets of this country may be in the offing. These are the sorts of things, Gordon, that you have such clarity about. And I cannot thank you enough for the efforts that you make day in and day out to share those insights with not just our audience, but those of many other, you know, media outlets, because it's incalculably important, especially in this election season, that we have that kind of information before the public and before investors so that we understand what we're doing and its implications. Thank you again, Gordon Chang, for the great work you do. Follow that great work at Gordon G. Chang, folks, and we'll talk with you again next week. In the meantime, stay well, my friend. God bless you. Next up, Rick Manning joins us to talk about divestchinanow.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are visiting for this block with one of the most, I believe, astute, innovative, courageous, and able conservative movement leaders in the country today. His name is Richard Manning. He runs a group called Americans for Limited Government. He formerly served in the Labor Department in the George H.W. Bush administration, but he has been extraordinarily active and effective on a host of fronts that matter to the future of our country and our freedoms. And I'm very pleased to say he's now engaged in one that I very much support, called Divest China Now. Rick Manning, we were just talking a little bit about the need to do that with our friend Gordon Chang. I'm very pleased to have you with us to talk about what this initiative is and what it's done so far and what you envision it doing from here. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio.
You're bringing up something that is probably one of the most critical things happening in our country. One thing that people don't realize is that we are effectively funding China's growing emergency military power that's being grown for the simple purpose of beating us, of killing us, of enslaving us. And yet Wall Street, through actually our own accounts, are going after or funding these tyrants, these slaveholders, and making us slaveholders in the process. And they're doing it by putting basically emerging market index funds with a lot of China stuffed in it into our retirement accounts, into our pension funds. And so we don't even know, or even into our, when we just do an index fund and think we're just, you know, investing as safely as possible, what we end up many times having are emerging market funds in there because it's balanced, quote unquote, and those emerging market funds are about half China. So we are inadvertently and unwittingly being turned into Chinese slaveholders. We are profiting off of China's slaveholding.
We're told in the course of the day, perhaps after this program is recorded, but before it's broadcast, that the president's team is going to go after some of the products that are manufactured by Chinese slave labor. But when you talk about us becoming slaveholders, walk us through what that means.
Well, when we invest in Chinese companies that are using slave labor or child labor, and we don't have to know it, when that happens, we are then profiting off that slave labor. It's very simple. And there's no, and this isn't passive. This is something that the people are putting us into China know about. They're actively engaged in that because they're trying, and as a result, you and I are being turned into slaveholders. Let me give you, this is really just pretty basic, but the Labor Department, and as you mentioned, I was at the Labor Department, I guess, 12 years ago now. But the Labor Department lists various products that are made around the world using child or slave labor. China has 12 product categories that are made using child and slave labor. Let's go. Things like Christmas ornaments. Yeah, those nice Christmas ornaments we buy that say made in China. chances are they're made by slaves, and in many cases by Christian slaves, so we can have a cheap trinket to put on our tree. Okay, doesn't that make you feel great to know that? Say there are multiple other examples. Electronics, you know, little Apple iPhone you have. Well, chances are the electronics inside of that Apple iPhone were put together by child or slave labor. Now, doesn't that make you feel good to spend $1,000 for an iPhone, knowing that Apple was spending pennies to have it put together using slave labor through, by the way, Apple does it through a third party company, of course. So Apple doesn't do it, but they just hire the people who use slave labor. So those are two examples where we see right in our own hands the product of slave labor, and when we buy it, we are effectively enabling it, and when we invest in it, we are profiting off of it, and that is immoral. I don't think anybody in America wants to be a slaveholder in China, and that's why we have to divest from China now.
Well, and there are other reasons too, of course. I mean, abuses of human rights is one category. Another that our colleague Roger Robinson and his RWR advisory group has pointed out in connection with this Ant Group IPO that is coming to Hong Kong and Shanghai momentarily, and that evidently is expected through companies like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley and Citigroup. They're going to be investing, as you said, Rick Manning, immense amounts of money, multi-billions of dollars from U.S. investors through these various means, indexes among them, A-share trades and B-share trades and the like, that most of us haven't any idea are in our portfolios, let alone perhaps quite substantially. This is a question that I guess I wanted to put to you, is this divestchinanow.org effort of yours, as I understand it, is aimed at, among other things, not just lighting up what's happening here and the implications of it for our national security, as well as for these other interests. But who's responsible for engineering this kind of exposure of American investors in this way, Rick?
In this case, it's Wall Street. In almost every case, it's Wall Street. People like Larry Fink from BlackRock, who are essentially driving money into China. Let me tell people why the IPO is important. What an IPO is when a company is offering stock for the first time into the public domain. So it is a straight cash fundraiser. Nothing else, nothing more. It is, so if you buy an IPO, you're essentially giving that company and the people who bring it to your attention money so they can grow and profit and do all those things. Well, normally that's a fine idea. But when you're doing an IPO for what is effectively an unsafe, and for a Chinese company, you are effectively pouring $20, $30, $40 billion in this particular case directly into the coffers of the Chinese that they're going to turn around and use to build military equipment to kill our men in arms, our women in arms, and to enslave us. That's what we're doing. That's what Wall Street is bringing to your table. And you know, Wall Street should be ashamed of themselves. And that's one of the things we're trying to do through divestchinanow.org, is we are attempting to create a shaming campaign that directly at them and showing their neighbors. And we're not going to do the Antifa march their streets, stupid stuff. What we're going to do, though, is we're going to educate people in that community that it is unacceptable, and that they, if they're going to invest in immoral and dangerous companies in China, if they're going to do that, then they have to own it. They have to accept it. You know, the fact that they're going to be able to throw a nice party for, you know, with a bunch of their friends and the Hamptons is interesting. What's relevant is the money that pays for that party is actually going to China to try to destroy the very American way of life that they're enjoying. And that's what we're going to make sure they know about, people know about it. The money's coming from these transactions. Because here's what they get a little vague on the side of these transactions. When you're talking about $40 billion, you know, these big Wall Street banks aren't doing it for free. You know, so they get a significant amount of money to offer these hundreds of millions of dollars. And that flows down into bonuses for their employees who are, in fact, doing the work on it. And so what we do, okay, what they're doing with this is they're effectively doing the same thing as if they were sending money to Germany in 1938 to build Volkswagen. And that is a, and then, you know, in 1941, oh, you know, how would we know when we're, our men are arms fighting against the very machines that they funded? Well, we can see the future in this. We have to cut China off from their capital flows. And that's what this divest China now or is to cut China off from their capital flows.
Rick, I want to just salute you for what I thought was an ingenious effort over the weekend to sort of kick this campaign off. Talk a little bit about that.
We actually started with a little kind of notice campaign where we flew over Rehoboth Beach, where former Vice President Joe Biden has a house. And we flew a banner over there that said, Joe, divestchinanow.org. And got some, and Breitbart picked it up, some others picked it up around the country that we were doing this. This is just a kind of a beginning visual for salvo that we're doing. This is going, we're engaged in the next 3 to 4 months. We're going to be engaged in a hammer and tong fight to try to get Wall Street to wake up and stop paying for our own destruction by sending money to China, stop engaging in immoral activity of funding slave produced goods, and truthfully to start protecting their own assets of their investors, because as Keith Krux says from the State Department, these Chinese investments are extraordinarily risky, and they're not suitable for retirement or other investments. Only the most risk favorable investors should invest in China, because China is engaged in a wholesale campaign against the United States. At any time, those investments can turn a cropper, because guess what? China is a communist country. You don't really own anything when you invest in China. You own a promise from the Chinese government that they're going to pay. And that promise has been proven to be false time and time again.
Rick Manning, we have to let you go, but I did just want to say, you mentioned Larry Fink, the founder and CEO of BlackRock. One of the other outrages of all of this is not only that he's making lots of money and his company is making lots of money out of these kinds of, I believe, selling out of our country, but he's also simultaneously hectoring everybody he can get his hands on in Wall Street and in the business world of the United States to conform to his so-called environment, social justice, and governance agenda. The last time I checked, China doesn't have any, you know, credit going for it on any of those counts. It's one of the worst offenders in every regard. So the hypocrisy, as well as I think the exposing of American investors to real risks for his own gain, is a particular example that I hope your campaign divestchinanow.org will focus intensively on. Rick Manning, we appreciate your visiting with us and your leadership. Next up, we'll speak with Kevin Freeman. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being each week, by a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, among many other things, the host of Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. He is also the driving force behind a terrific blog, globaleconomicwarfare.com, and the author of 2 best-selling books, Secret Weapon and Game Plan. He is, of course, Kevin Freeman, a good friend and great asset when it comes to matters involving economic warfare like that which the Chinese Communist Party has been waging against this country for decades. Kevin Freeman, it's good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us as always. Kevin, one of the things that I just wanted to salute you for and urge people to take a look at is a rendering of a book that you've been telling us about for some time called Unrestricted Warfare, the basic plan the Chinese Communist Party has been using to take down this country through means other than kinetic warfare techniques, that is to say the old-fashioned kind. You've, when I say rendered it, you've now got a series of short videos about it. I'm pleased to say they're at presentdangerchina.org and I believe at economicwarroom.com as well. Just very quickly, tell us about those videos and why they really should be considered required viewing, I believe.
Well, Frank, what we did was we took the book and we just walked through the 17 different aspects of unrestricted warfare that the Chinese colonels wrote in the book, whether it's financial warfare, or smuggling warfare, culture warfare, drug warfare. All of these are non-traditional military, non-kinetic means of attacking an adversary. And then we just documented in 2-minute warnings, one after another. This is smuggling warfare. This is what they said it was. This is how they're doing it. And they've been doing it for 20 years. And we just laid it out there because they have been following this as their game plan for the past 2 decades. And we have been oblivious to it. And yet when you see the facts, when you view point by point by point, you realize this is a part of their plan, and they are at war with us. There's no question about it.
So, Kevin Freeman, if what we're seeing is Wall Street basically being used to underwrite our enemies, there has to be an alternative use for these funds that would not endanger our country or, you know, abuse human rights or, as Rick Manning was talking about, involve, for example, you know, slave labor, for heaven's sakes. You've done some work on this. Talk a little bit about your concept of patriotic investing as an alternative.
Sure, Frank. Well, there's no question that unrestricted warfare includes financial warfare, which means entering and subverting banking and stock markets. And Chinese Communist Party has done that. They have bought off a good portion of Wall Street. They've gotten enormous fees for deals that are really bad for Americans in many cases. You know, we get a pig in the poke, but they get a huge transaction fee for doing it. Just imagine buying a really lousy home at a high price, and the real estate broker makes a fat commission, and you get stuck with something that's not useful to you. The alternative is for Americans is that they can invest in things that will support America. If we are truly in a global economic war, and I believe that's the case, then we ought to be investing with footing in those companies and industries that help America be stronger, help the rest of the world that's lined up against this menace of the Chinese Communist Party be stronger. So you can invest in America, you can invest in Australia, you can invest in Europe and lots of other places, but don't invest where you're just literally handing money to the Chinese Communist Party, like so many of these IPOs that we've talked about and so forth. So the Patriotic Investing Program, we started at Liberty University. It's out of the Economic War Room. It's affiliated with the National Security Investment Consultant Institute. We're training financial advisors so that they can be on the ready to help clients. Clients say, I don't want to invest in China. I would rather invest in ways that help America. Well, then you'll want an NSIC certified advisor. And we train them at Liberty University. More at economicwarroom.com/advisor.
This is a hugely important initiative, it seems to me, Kevin Freeman, and I commend you for engaging in it because, especially if this campaign that Rick Manning was telling us about of divest China now takes off, and I see no reason why it shouldn't be at least as big a deal as the campaign to end American investment in South Africa was a generation ago. This would be something that those advisors will be very much needed for. Kevin, one other thing, we saw a lot of volatility in the stock market late last week and some today as we speak. That seems to be in part because high frequency trading, as it's called, is kicking in. First of all, is that in fact what's going on? And second, is there a prospect that this mechanism, HTF as it's known, could wind up actually being used by hostile powers against our market? And how does that fit into unrestricted warfare?
Well, the first thing is, number one, it is high-frequency trading, but we don't know yet if this is normal result of an overpriced market or if there's something that's on the horizon that the market that we don't see. You know, the stock market ran up substantially, and so for it to take a breather might be very normal. but it is increased volatility, and it's coming right before the election, just as it did in 2008. And so you've got to wonder. And then you go again back to Unrestricted Warfare as a manual, and it says a single man-made stock market crash. And they talk about following the tactics of George Soros, right in the book, written in 1999. And you got to wonder, could they be impacting our markets? And the answer is clearly yes. High-frequency trading is computer algorithmic trading, and you could either directly hack it, and China has great hackers. They could hack in and manipulate the algorithms, or you could do something as simple as what the Syrian Electronic Army did in 2013, I believe, when they hacked the Associated Press Twitter feed, and they changed a few words in the tweet, and it triggered the algorithm. Because the algorithms are searching all of the news, and when they see trigger words, it causes them to sell or buy. So they could know how to trigger that sale, just like they did. They tweeted that the White House had been hit, the president hurt, and the stock market crashed instantaneously. And it recovered when we found out the White House had not been hit. But there are more subtle ways they could do it, and they could literally control our market for days.
And Kevin Freeman, what you've just described, that the Syrian cyber warfare operations actually did the better part of a decade ago, the Chinese Communist Party's cyber warriors are certainly capable of doing, would know all about, and may actually have been exercising in sort of smaller ways already. So the question then occurs, what can we do to try to prevent that kind of action from being used in our stock market to achieve political outcomes, which again, the Chinese Communist Party has made no bones about seeking, namely the defeat of Donald Trump's reelection bid.
Right. Well, if you crash the stock market before an election, 100% correlation with the party in power losing power. So we know it works. What we can do about it is I did a show on it. It's about the uptick rule. I wrote a blog on it. I've written in my books, and I've covered it extensively talking around the country. There's a simple rule that was in place from 1937 to 2007. It was called the uptick rule. It was put there by Joe Kennedy as the head of the Securities Exchange Commission, the father of President Kennedy, and it worked without fail during that 70-year period. It just says that you can't sell short a company unless the last trade was higher. It was a simple rule. The SEC tried to finagle with it, and they pulled it out in 2007. It was disastrous when they pulled it out. They put a faux version of it in. They call it the new uptick rule. It doesn't work nearly as effectively. If you listen to Jim Cramer or Charles Schwab or Leon Cooperman, all these market experts who say, hey, why did you monkey with the simple rule that worked and put this complex thing in that doesn't work?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it, as they say. There's a decent chance that a lot of us will be broke if it isn't repaired. How can that be done very quickly, Kevin Freeman?
Well, I think perhaps an executive order. The SEC can readopt the rule. They just need to do it immediately. They can't say, well, we'll have a comment period for 6 months or something. They have to do it immediately because, as you noticed, the market has gotten very volatile all of a sudden. And we expect there will be increased tensions around the country in these protests and riots and so forth. And the stock market is vulnerable, and it's right before an election. And we should not allow a hacker to have the keys to determining who will own the White House next. We should not allow that. And the way to stop it is put in place the uptick rule.
Kevin Freeman, thank you as always. God bless you, my friend. We'll talk with you again next week. We'll talk with the rest of you, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.